Wrapper.
Mildred looked over the garage.
Sort of an early warning system. It wouldn't give us much advance notice of microwaves, but some is better than none.
How does it work?
JB eased off the bolt of the Uzi. The blaster had been under undue tension for days while they were unconscious. He only hoped the spring was okay and the rapid fire would still function properly. Taking a seat on a pile of tires, Doc answered.
If there is a strong magnetic field, or the presence of microwaves, the foil will receive an identical charge across its entire surface, and the two flaps will naturally repel each other, separating wide and fast. As long as they stay closed, we are not near any strong electromagnetic fields.
Huh. Pretty good trick. The white coats in your day knew about microwaves and sats?
Doc started to reply. Then his features contorted in confusion. Conflicting emotions played across the time traveler's face, bordering on blind panic. The companions said nothing and turned their backs on the old man to continue exploring the garage. After what the white coats of Over Project Whisper had done to Doc, his friends understood if his mind wandered sometimes. He always came back, and he had never let them down in a fight. At least, not yet.
Doesn't matter, as long as it works.
Christie's voice seemed to calm the old man, and Doc faced the redhead, reason returning to his eyes. He displayed his oddly perfect white teeth.
Oh, most assuredly, dear lady. The laws of magnetics are most adamantine. It works. Trust me.
I always have.
Jack gestured with his blaster.
Check outside?
Nodding, Ryan led the way along the zigzagging corridor to the front door. The passageway was wide enough to accommodate a semi-truck, and clusters of fluorescent lights hung from the high curved ceiling.
Dad, I always meant to ask, why does this zigzag?
Ryan slowed his pace.
Rats can only travel straight. They go right through stone or metal, but lead stops them. That's what these walls are lined with, yards of lead. So one step out of the way and you're safe. All these extra sharp angles are just to be sure. One would do just as good a job.
Pursing his lips, the boy said nothing, filing the information away. Then, stooping to one knee, he inspected an object on the floor.
Hey! JB! Over here!
The armorer turned from the hip, the Uzi poised for action.
Trouble?
Nope. Yours?
Dean held out a battered hat. With a cry of delight, JB took the fedora and straightened the brim into something presentable again. Easing it onto his head, he adjusted the angle and grinned.
Better. My man just can't think straight with his brain exposed.
Reaching the end of the passage, the companions found the huge vanadium steel doors of the exit. The material was unmarked, but it had been designed to withstand the atomic fireball of a nuke blast. Their footprints led from the massive slab, the floor littered with spent brass, a few scattered leaves, and dried splotches of green blood.
Triple red.
Ryan shifted the blaster to his left hand and used the right to tap an access code on the keypad on the wall. The others spread out so as to not offer a group target. The companions had left something very hard to chill outside, and if the kite hadn't done the job, the bastard might still be waiting for them to emerge. Slowly, the portal rumbled aside. Instantly, a black hurricane roared into the tunnel, the companions staggering backward from the furious assault. The raging storm filled the corridor with streaming waves of some kind of dark material that stuck to their clothes and skin. Within seconds, it became impossible to see one another, much less what was outside the redoubt.
Retreat to the garage!
Ryan held an arm in front of his mouth as protection as he strove to key in the code that would close the door. Stumbling to the walls, they blindly followed the zigzagging passageway back into the redoubt. The fierce winds pounded them every step of the way, gusts knocking them against the walls and off into the dirty floor. Battered and bruised, the companions were forced to grab one another's clothing for support. As a group, they shuffled hastily away from the thundering onslaught of bitter-tasting flakes. Charging from the howling tunnel, the companions moved out of the way of the incoming cloud and took cover behind whatever was available, waiting for the outer door to close. The black cloud, resembling car exhaust, poured into the redoubt, covering everything from the grease pit to the rafters with a thick layer of soot. Ryan couldn't hear above the whistling wind, but as the exterior door finally closed, the storm abruptly died, whirlwinds of ash dancing across the thickly coated floor.
by the three Kennedys! And what, pray tell, was that?
Curious, Mildred picked a flake off her encrusted shirt and watched it crumble in her palm.
This is all that remains of this part of Tennessee.
She wiped her hand on her pants.
Should have realized this would be waiting for us outside. After so many days of being cooked by the kite, the land has literally been burnt into ash.
Blue eyes staring from a blackened face, Dean blinked in wonder.
So the trees, the bushes, the grass?
Gone. All gone.
Oh, well, shit.
The albino felt as if he had just escaped from the grave. The ash was inside his fatigues and already starting to work its way into his shorts and boots. He snorted to clear his nose and gagged on the aftertaste. Fried dirt. Then he realized that's exactly what it was. Stomping her cowboy boots, Christy wildly shook her head, trying to assist her struggling hair to straighten out the tangles from the rough winds. Ash sprinkled to the floor, forming a small cloud around the dirty woman.
Gaia! That was worse than any Deathland sandstorm.
Christy beat at her clothes.
Oh, we're not going to get a single yard out of the redoubt without masks of some kind. We'd choke to death in minutes.
Also need ropes to keep us together.
Wiping his blaster clean, Ryan hawked and spit. Gray phlegm hit the floor.
We can make masks out of bedsheets. That's easy enough, but pointless. There's not going to be any animals out there to hunt for food. What the kite didn't kill, this ash would soon suffocate to death.
Make good cover, night creep lose, if live to get there.
Breaking into a ragged cough, Dean brushed the ash from his hair and tried to wipe off his face with a sleeve, but that only seemed to make it smear. Even worse, his blaster had caught the brunt of the wind when the main door opened. He couldn't risk firing the weapon until it had been thoroughly disassembled and cleaned. Tipping the blaster downward, powdery residue poured from the barrel. The situation was really bad. If anything attacked the group right now, they'd be dead meat, completely unable to defend themselves. JB beat his hat clean on the end of a work table.
Dark night, this sucks! We got company in the tunnel, a hailstorm outside, and the Mattrans isn't working.
Looks like we're here for a while.
Each of the companions was lost in thought for a moment, as they watched the black ash swirling about, to finally settle on the garage floor in a smooth ebony carpet.
Enough. If we can't leave, then I want a level-by-level search of the entire redoubt. There must be some food in here. Tin cans, jars, MRE packs, self-heats. Bring what you find to the control room.
Not the kitchen?
Eat as we work. Silas was smart, but not a genius. If he turned off the Mattrans, then we can get it back online. Once we've had some food and a hot shower, then we can get busy.
Jack frowned.
Gonna leave?
Ryan strode across the filthy garage, leaving a contrail of churned ash in his wake.
Hell no. We're gonna finish the job of killing the Blues. Every one of the bastards.
Thundering chaos ruled the land. Shriveled trees bowed under the violent maelstrom, and lakes of black mud sloshed onto caked shores. Whole bushes came out of the crunchy soil and flew away into the ash storm swirling around the Shiloh Valley. Shuffling through the hurricane, a slavering mutie flapped its loose lips over the long, saber-toothed fangs that extended from its wide mouth. This was a good day, it thought. Food was near. A smell of blood hung in the air, which even the tempest couldn't hide. Something had died violently, and the mutie simply wanted whatever was left after the slayer had eaten its fill of the prey. Fresh meat was the best, but old meat was more tender. As the mutie neared the top of a barren hill, the wind was so strong it had to dig into the soil with its clawed feet to keep from becoming airborne. Step by slow step, it relentlessly followed the odor of blood. Black ash streamed past the creature in an endless supply, and lightning crashed in the hidden sky above. But to its cat-like eyes, the world was perfectly clear in a dozen shades of black and white. Eventually cresting a hill, the mutie looked down a wrong stone thing and made happy noises. Food lived in such places, juicy food. Correct stone things reached high into the sky, and only four legs lived there. It couldn't catch those, too fast. But wrong stone things were flat,